I had computer problems as I walked in here, so if it didn't save what I did this morning, you'll be more confused than I am. Let me read something very quickly. Tongues are for a sign, not for those who believe, but to unbelievers. But prophecy is for a sign, not to unbelievers, but to those who believe. Therefore, if the whole church assembles together, and all speak in tongues, and ungifted men or unbelievers enter, will they not say that you are mad? But if all prophesy, and an unbeliever or an ungifted man enters, he is convicted by all, he is called account by all, and the secrets of his heart are disclosed, so he will fall on his face and worship God, declaring that God is certainly among you. The point that I want to make from this is, sometimes when a congregation is assembled as a congregation, unbelievers walk in and say, wow, I've been wrong all these years, they have the truth. Wouldn't that be wonderful if that happened here? It may be happening here. If you came to class on Thursday, what you would have witnessed is somebody who has been visiting us for some time, who has been contributing to class, and you can see that sometimes he hears stuff that's said and you know, it doesn't quite compute because he's not used to it. On Thursday, we broached the subject of baptism, and I dare say it opened up an opportunity, and maybe he will be thinking significantly about this. So pray about this as a church. We're working together, even Thursdays in our classes, trying to spread the gospel. Keep that in your prayers. Mark chapter 5. Mark 5. We have to pick up a little bit from where we left off last week. We didn't quite cover all the material we were supposed to last week. Is anybody in here cold?
No.
Is anybody in here hot?
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody's hot. Anybody not hot? Anybody? I'll let your father-in-law deal with that. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, one too many, right? Okay. Okay, so Mark chapter 4, what we talked about last week. He stilled the sea. He calmed the sea. Mark chapter 5, he healed the man who had a legion of demons in him. Mark chapter 5, verse 21. When Jesus had crossed over again in the boat to the other side, a large crowd gathered around him, so he stayed by the seashore. One of the synagogue officials named Jairus came up, and seeing him, fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Please come and lay your hands on her so that she will get well and live." And he went off with him, and a large crowd was following him and pressing in on him. Okay, so this man comes up to him and says, "Hey, can you heal my daughter?" Jesus says, "Yes, I'm coming." As they're going, something else happens. This happens all the time throughout the Gospels. We have multiple stories happening in one story, or it's a continuous line with a lot of different little sub-stories in it. It's all about Jesus, but here's another sub-story. A woman who had been hemorrhaging for 12 years, who had a hemorrhage for 12 years, and had endured much at the hands of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, was not helped at all, but rather had grown worse. After hearing about Jesus, she came up in the crowd behind him and touched his cloak. For she thought, "If I just touch his garments, I will get well." Immediately, the flow of her blood was dried up, and she felt it in her body that she was healed of her affliction. There's something going on here. Don't miss it. She had been hemorrhaging for 12 years. She had endured much at the hands of many physicians, had spent all that she had, was not helped at all, but rather was getting worse. And Jesus comes along, and boom, immediately she was healed. This is emphasizing this. The setup is emphasizing just how powerful, just how miraculous this miracle was. Verse 29, Mark's favorite word is immediately. Verse 30, immediately, Jesus, perceiving in himself that the power proceeding from him had gone forth, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my garments?" His disciples said to him, "You see the crowd pressing in on you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" In other words, they're saying, there is no way to know who touched me. In fact, many of the crowd were, in the other accounts, denying it. Wasn't me, wasn't me, wasn't me. And the disciples say, look, there's no way to know. Verse 32, he looked and saw the woman who had done this. But the woman, fearing and trembling, aware of what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." A couple thoughts from this. First of all, the importance of faith. This little section here in Mark 4 and Mark 5 is emphasizing over and over and over faith. Your faith has made you well. Look in verse 40 of chapter 4. "Why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith?" This verse we just read, "Daughter, your faith has made you well." Coming back to the story of Jairus, verse 35, while he was still speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official, that's Jairus, saying, "Your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore?" And Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." Faith, 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 over and over and over. This is emphasizing, if you want to be a disciple of Jesus's, if you want to have healing, be healed, you need to have faith. The importance of faith. At the same time, the impotence of faith alone. This is not my thought. Well, it is my thought, but somebody else wrote it too, so I copied what they wrote. From a pulpit, he's the editor of the Anglican Church, writes, "The lesson, however, must not be forgotten that it is not enough to believe with the heart. You got to have more than that." In other words, I am not the only preacher who preaches that in this world. I suspect some of you think the same thing. I hope you all do. Okay, so he heals this woman. Back to the story of Jairus. While he was speaking, they came from the house of the synagogue official saying, "Your daughter has died." In other words, there's nothing left to be done here. Why trouble the teacher anymore but Jesus? Remember these two words the rest of your life. But Jesus. If you're ever having a problem, you're wondering, oh, what can I? Can it be done with God? All things are possible, but Jesus. Just remember that, and you'll be saved the rest of your life. Now, your daughter has died. Why trouble the teacher anymore? This is the perfect setup, isn't it? Oh, there's nothing he can do. Jesus, we would say his ears were tingling right now. Jesus, overhearing what was being spoken, said to the synagogue official, "Do not be afraid any longer, only believe." And he allowed no one to accompany him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. And they came to the house of the synagogue official, and he saw the commotion, the people loudly weeping and wailing. Some of these are paid professionals. You have to understand that. You don't have to. It's nice to understand that. They're paid mourners. Entering in, he said to them, "Why make a commotion and weep? The children has not died, but is asleep." They began laughing at him. But putting them all out, he took along the child's father and mother and his own companions and entered the room where the child was. Taking the child by hand, he said to her, "Talitha cum," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, get up." Immediately, the girl got up and began to walk, for she was 12 years old. And immediately, they were completely astounded. He gave them strict orders that no one should know about this. And he said that something should be given to her to eat. Okay, a couple points from this all. If anybody has a comment or question, please. First of all, be aware of God, that God is aware of you. I'm actually taking this from the story of the woman. Did you notice what happened? I'm backing up into the story of the woman, verse 32. "Who touched me?" And the woman, in Luke's account, it says that when she had seen, she had not escaped notice. He turns around, "Who touched me?" "I don't know, I don't know, I didn't do it, I didn't do it." We can't know, and he looks right at her. God knew, Jesus knew. Remember this, Jesus, God is aware of you. Job 34:22, "There is no darkness or deep shadow where the workers of iniquity may hide themselves." It's impossible. God knows you. At the same time, this is a comfort for us, that God knows us. Why would that be a comfort for us? What's Lee thinking this time?
He cares for us, he loves us.
He cares for us, he loves us, and he knows us. He knows what's best for us. Now, if he knows us, how would he let us know what he knows about us? If he knows us, how would he let us know what he knows about us? Am I making sense?
Through his word.
Through his word. 1 Corinthians 13. Do you remember? Love never fails. Verse 8, if there are gifts of prophecy, they will be done away. If there are tongues, they will cease. If there is knowledge, it will be done away. We know in part and prophesy in part. But when the perfect comes, the partial will be done away. When I was a child, I used to speak like a child, think like a child, reason like a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. Now we see in a mirror dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will fully known, just as I also have been fully known. This is saying exactly what I'm saying. I'm assuming that most of us in here, if not all, I'm hoping all of us understand the context of this. Spiritual gifts are going to go away. And he says, look, we only have partial knowledge now. The gifts confirm the message. When that message has been delivered, we don't need the gifts anymore. They're going to go away, just like when I was a child, I grew up. The church is a child, it grows up. For now we see in part, know in part, but later on we will know just as God already knows everything about us, is really the point. James 1 talks about the word being a mirror. We look at it. God knows everything about us already. Be aware that God is aware of you. Be smart. You will confess now or later. There's no question about it. It will happen. This woman illustrates that. In Matthew's account, it says, when she saw that she had not escaped notice. She had not escaped. We will not escape notice. Someday, we will confess Jesus as Lord. The question is, now or later? And you know the difference. So, be smart about it. Do not be afraid. All four stories include fear. All these, the two we read last week, and or three really, or two last week and two this week. They all include fear. Verse 41, they became very much afraid of chapter 4. Chapter 5, the men of the city are afraid. Verse 15, they became frightened. Then, in chapter 5, the next story, she is with fear and trembling in verse 33. And then in verse 36, Jesus says to the man, do not be afraid any longer. All four stories have fear. Two of them have the antidote to fear. Verse 36, do not be afraid, only believe. To the disciples in chapter 4, verse 40, why are you afraid? Do you still have no faith? So we see the antidote to fear is having faith. Practical applications. Running low on money this month? What's Matthew 6 say? All these things will be... Don't worry about it. That doesn't mean don't do anything about it. It means don't worry about it. Running low on money, go out and get some work or whatever you got to do. But don't worry about it. God will take care of you. Sick? I'm not saying don't feel pain, but don't worry about it. God will... Don't fear. Have faith. Having a life-changing event? Don't fear. Have faith in God. By the way, that has to do with this life right now. Our living now. If you're afraid, have faith. Some of us may be afraid of the future, judgment. What's the cure for that fear? Faith, yes, and?
Obedience.
Yes, obedience. John, 1 John 3, I forget exactly where it says, perfect love casts out fear. And the whole context is, what are you doing? Are you living the life that you should live? If you are, you're loving perfectly. That doesn't mean we're perfect, but it means we're doing what we should be. We're trying, and as long as we're doing that, we have no fear of what's going to come. He came, he saw, and he conquered. I'm talking about three different people here. Jairus came, didn't he? And what was he? A leader of the synagogue. Interesting.
He knew the scriptures. I mean, he was well taught scriptures. I mean, he knew.
He knew?
And he was looking for the Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so he would have been one who was, whether he was one like Andrew or not, one without guile, one who was truly seeking and believed Jesus was the Messiah. Not just to say.
No.
To assume that he probably did.
And at least he came. How many other of the rulers came? In fact, what did most of the other rulers do? Nicodemus came when? Probably says something about Nicodemus. I'm not going to jump up and down and say too much about that. But it probably does. This guy comes. He's got, nighttime or not, Nicodemus had courage, and so does this man. That's my whole point. Peter and a whole bunch of others saw. Peter saw. Jesus takes them. It says, here, come and watch me, and I'm going to raise. This is the second raising that he'll perform. Peter saw this. Now, I'm reminded of Jesus' resurrection. Afterward, some people saw, some people did not. Some of the people who did not believed. Some of the people who did not believe. Who didn't believe?
Thomas.
Doubting Thomas, we call him, right? So, they say, look, we really saw him. And Thomas says, what? At the end of that, verse 29, John 20:29, because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are they who did not see and yet believed. He's actually talking about immediately, primarily, those back then. There were some others who didn't see and they also believed. Thomas, they're blessed. Thomas was too. But the point is that if you have the faith that will trust the disciples when they say something, then you're doing all right. By the way, what convinced Thomas?
Physical evidence.
Okay, physical evidence. What convinced everybody else that he was the Lord? Physical evidence, all the miracles he did. We don't have those miracles, do we? Okay. What's the next passage say? The next verse. I was in John 20. 29 says, because you have seen me, have you believed? Blessed are those who did not see and believe. Therefore, many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. These have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and believing you may have life in his name. We don't need to actually have seen them. All we need is their eyewitness account of it. So yes, we do have them in written form.
Come defend Thomas here for a minute.
Oh, I didn't mean to pick on him. Go ahead.
Because I think we call him Doubting Thomas, and I guess it's a somewhat useful thing. But I don't think he doubted the lordship of Jesus. I think he doubted the resurrection because he was so convinced of the death of Jesus. And if you go back and look at Thomas early on, I think he's one of the stronger apostles. And this is an astounding thing. He's dead. There was no doubt in Thomas's mind that he was dead. He followed him the whole time. He hadn't abandoned him or anything else. It was just, this is not something, it is not an everyday occurrence. It's kind of only really happened once.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree 100%. He doubted the death, the resurrection. He doubted the resurrection. That's the whole point of whether or not he's Lord or not, he will come to believe he's Lord, but initially he's doubting his resurrection. I agree 100%. Yeah, I'm sorry that I may have said something else in there. Okay, anybody else? Comment or question so far? All right, this brings us to our questions for lesson 22. Go ahead and get those out. Well, you are. I'm going to switch things. So far, we're doing all right with presentations. Wonderful. Let me say this. While I was preparing for this, I had an emotional moment, and I'm going to share it with you. Here's why. 3 years ago, Marcy and I were moving home from Budapest. 4 years ago, we were coming to the peak of discouragement or understanding just how discouraged we were going to be later on. coming to the peak of some problems. And I used to hand out the questions there. They stopped doing them. Actually, they, not including Marcy, but everybody else stopped doing them. And so months later, I stopped asking them in class. Months later, they asked me, among other questions, why did you stop handing out the questions in class? So, in my notes for this part that we're going into, I have written a note to myself. Today, I begin asking questions in class again. Now, here's why I bring this up. The Christians of this church, I am very thankful for. Because you do. You take your home Bible study seriously. That's the difference. The difference isn't that, okay, so Lee gets some kick out of you answering his questions, although I might. Sometimes it's funny. What are they doing here? Right? The point is that you're home studying your Bible and you come prepared. Amen. I cannot tell you how encouraging. And that's what happens. You grow and you come in and you encourage me and hopefully I in turn encourage you. And we go up and we go up and we go up. Now, granted, maybe they didn't answer the questions because they didn't understand them. Of course, they were translated. In that case, then that encourages me even more. Because that probably means you don't understand him either, but yet you try, don't you? Either way, I'm thankful that you answer the question. And again, the point is, it's just that we have come prepared with God's word in our mind. Healing two blind men. What did they ask of Jesus, and what did they call him? John Bosworth, please.
They asked for mercy, and they called him Son of David.
According to what would they be healed, Ethan? Commissioning the 12 to preach, although that's not really right. What did the crowds say? Let's see. Let's go to, who do we got? John Moore?
Never have we seen this in all of Israel.
Yeah. And what did the Pharisees say, Jennifer? Okay, you don't have to. You're not up for it right now. Marcy? Okay. And Rob, why did Jesus have compassion on the people?
Because the children of Israel have been distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd.
What was plentiful, what was few, and what were the disciples to do about it, Gary?
Plentiful was harvest, few was laborers, and pray the Lord of harvest to send out laborers into this harvest.
Okay, am I missing anybody who's done these Mindy questions? Who was to go and where, Mindy? Yeah, this is what we call the limited commission, right?
I'm sorry, I'm
no, that's right. Yeah, only to the lost sheep, the lost sheep of Israel. What were they to say and do, John Bosworth, please?
This son of
God. Okay, anyone? Yeah, John Moore, please.
Kingdom of heaven is at hand. Mm-hmm. They heal the sick, cleanse lepers, cast out demons.
I was shooting for verses 7 and 8. How would they be received? Two answers. Ethan?
Favorably and unfavorably.
Before whom would they preach? Let's see. Where are we back to? Rob, please.
I put verses 10 18, before governors and kings, and then the cities of Israel.
Yeah. And how would they know what to say? Mindy? How should they preach? Marcy? Yeah, without fear, she said. What did Jesus come to bring, Gary?
Division, sword.
Yeah. Who was not worthy of Christ? John Bosworth.
Anyone who loved something other than God.
Yeah. And those who helped the disciples, what would they receive? Ethan? Okay, and the death of John the Baptist? Who did the people think Jesus was? Several answers. John Moore.
John the Baptist, Elijah, a prophet.
Okay. Why had John been in prison? John Moore.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because he told the king he was wrong.
Why couldn't Herod kill John? John Moore.
Because he knew he was righteous and holy.
And how did John die? John Moore. Okay. Yeah. comments or questions on the evil woman part? Or are you going to let it stand by itself? Okay. All right, back. I'm going to turn to Matthew 9. Now, it's the same. It's continuing chronologically. Matthew 9, verse 27. He had just healed Jairus' daughter. Verse 27, Jesus went out from there. As he went out, the two blind men followed him, crying out, "Have mercy on us, Son of David." There are three things that emphasize their faith. First, they are coming. Secondly, they are crying out, "Have mercy." Thirdly, what they call him, Son of David. That's a term that is applied to the Messiah. Somebody who knows the Messiah says, "Son of David." So they're showing a little bit of an advanced perception here, which is commendable. When he entered the house, the blind men, interesting, although they cannot see, they could see who he was. When they entered the house, the blind men came up to him, and Jesus said to him, "Do you believe that I am able to do this?" And they said to him, "Yes, Lord." And he touched their eyes, saying, "It shall be done to you according to your faith." See, the context still continues also, not only chronologically, but still it's faith, 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 faith. That's what we just studied last week and this morning and now again. Their eyes were opened. Jesus sternly warned them, "See to it that no one knows about this." But they went out and spread the news about him throughout all the land. So he's still getting famous. That is almost immediately going to change now. Okay. Why would he tell them, and we see this over and over, "Do not tell anybody about us"? Here's a hint. Chronologically speaking, John 6 is what we're going to study next. Why would he tell these Jews? Everywhere he goes, he tells Jews, "Don't tell anybody about me."
John the Baptist is still alive.
Yes.
In doing his work, in a sense, he kind of a prisoner.
Yeah, right. Remote work. Anything else?
Well, the crowds were going to throng him incredibly.
Yeah.
He was going to be, you know, so encompassed by the crowds that it's hard for him to get around and do his work.
What did, hard for him to get around and do his work. What did Jesus know? John 2, right before he starts talking to Nicodemus, but he was not, do you remember what it says? Entrusting himself. Committing himself to them because he knew what was in them. Something's going on here. John 6 is where they're going to come and take him. He feeds 5,000 people. That's going to be next week if we get there. He feeds 5,000 people, and the next thing they're trying to do is swarm him and make him king. I'm not sure how connected it is, but it seems that these are connected. Don't tell anybody who I am, because they're not prepared to. They don't understand who what this all really means. In fact, that's what John 6 is about. Guys, stop thinking about food. Think about what this all really means, is what John 6 is. Okay. So I think Matthew's point there is both faith and his fame also. Verse 32. As they were going out, a mute, demon-possessed man was brought to him, and after the mute was cast out, the mute man spoke, and the crowds were amazed and were saying, "Nothing like this has ever been seen in Israel." Two reactions. The second being, but the Pharisees were saying, "He casts out demons by the ruler of the demons." The works were working. People were saying, "Wow, we've never seen anything like this. I wonder what it means." At the same time, the Pharisees are doing what we have already seen them do in Matthew chapter 12, which chronologically takes place before Matthew chapter 9. What did they say in Matthew chapter 9? Same thing. Do you remember how Jesus responded there? He spent the rest of the chapter saying, not the whole chapter actually, but most of the rest of the chapter saying, "You are totally depraved."
If you stop and think about what you're saying, it makes absolutely no sense.
Right.
Even from an earthly point of view.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason you said it is because of your hearts. And your hearts are bad now, and they're going to get worse and worse and worse. So it is with this evil generation. This chapter, this event, something else happens. He doesn't lambaste the Pharisees. At least it's not recorded. Maybe he did. I don't have any idea. But what's recorded is, instead of lambasting the Pharisees, is, verse 35, Jesus was going through all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, healing every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. Seeing the people, he felt compassion on them because They were distressed and dispirited like sheep without a shepherd. Who here has ever felt at least a twinge of distress and dispiritment at the federal government? Why? They're not doing their job. That's what's going on here. They're like sheep without a shepherd. Who are the shepherds? The Pharisees. What did the Pharisees just said? He's not the Messiah. They're false shepherds. And the people, there is a spiritual revival going on of sorts. Jesus is going to be crucified, but a few days later, if you will, there's going to be a revival of Pentecostal proportions, right? So, Jesus, the Pharisees say he's casting out demons by the ruler of the demons. Jesus sees them and sees these people, and these people recognize the Pharisees are messed up. They don't got it right. And Jesus sees that, and he says to them, he says, actually in verse 37 to his disciples, "The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. Therefore, beseech the Lord of harvest to send out workers into his harvest." Verse chapter 10, verse 1. Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to cast them out, to heal every kind of disease and every kind of sickness. He names the 12 apostles. By the way, we're about 2 years into his ministry, and Matthew is just getting around to naming the 12 apostles. Kind of. Remember, Matthew is not chronologically. In Matthew chapter 9, one chapter earlier, he had just called Matthew. So Matthew is not chronological. Matthew is more topical. Verse 5, "The 12 Jesus sent out after instructing them." We're not going to read the instructions right now. Unbelievable lessons from them, but not right now. Chapter 11, verse 1, "When Jesus had finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, he departed from there to teach and preach in their cities." Some more thoughts. First of all, a good time to preach is when people are disenchanted with their religion. These people were distressed, dispirited at the false religion that they were in. They didn't want it. They realized, no, this is all messed up. How many Catholics have you talked to are happy with the Catholic Church? I don't know. I'm going to guess 10% of my numbers. I make a point because it's astounding the number of Catholics that are... Some of them are still... most of them are still Catholics. And what will they say? Well, I have this problem. It can only be one problem. It doesn't matter. They're disenchanted with... Many of them are. This issue comes up over and over and over. That is a perfect time. Ask why. Why specifically? Jesus knew why. We can't know why. We don't have inspiration. Why are you disenchanted with your religion? And let me tell you about what Jesus can do. It's a perfect time. Secondly, people sincerely seeking God will be satisfied only when they find true religion. Why were human beings put on the earth? Passage. Okay. Yes, that's Christians. So you got to assume that everybody's going to become a Christian. There's something more that is applicable to everybody. You read it and you say, this is why every person ever was put on the earth. There's actually a couple passages, but one's so very clear. Say it again. Okay, yes. Okay, yes, passage. Okay, Acts 17. Paul is in Athens, and he tells them, let me tell you about this God, this unknown God, from one man created everybody, having predetermined their appointed times and boundaries of their habitations, where they live, when they live, that they may, my version, sorry guys, that they may seek him. Let's turn there, Acts 17. Acts 17, verse 26, "He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God if they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us." God put us on here. My parents used to have a Volkswagen Rabbit gasoline engine. One day, you know what my mom did before they changed the nozzle size? Oops. Or maybe it wasn't before then. I don't know. But I know what she did. She put diesel in the Rabbit. You know how far she got? About 3 miles down the road. She could have gone further, but she decided wisely to call Dad and say, Dad, Schnooky, she used to call him. I did something. Okay, the car won't run. It's designed for gasoline. It's not going to run on the diesel. Until it gets the gasoline, it's not going to run. You put anything in it you want to, but if it's not gasoline, it's not going to perform. Will it run on diesel? Yes, but it's not going to like it. Right, for a little while. Okay, she got 3 miles down the road. People, Acts 17, other, God put us on this earth for one major reason, the reason, to find him. And unless we find him, you know what? We're not actually going to be satisfied. This includes false religions. The flip side of this is, anyone satisfied with no religion or false religion is not sincerely seeking God. That's, you can know it. It's a fact. I didn't say it. I just repeated it. So here's the question. In such cases, when you're out there and you're talking to somebody who you deliver the gospel as clearly as you understand it, as confidently as you can, and you delivered it well and they don't accept it, what do you do in this case?
There is a point in Matthew 10. It says there's the times you shake the dust off your feet and just move on.
Exactly. Gary.
And be confident that you just planted the seed.
Yeah.
The first time you deliver the gospel to somebody, you're familiar with the building right out of the water in some cases. So you may have just planted a seed. Let that seed take hold.
And then?
Well, you may have to water it.
Okay. There's one other thing that we haven't mentioned yet that I can think of. Who? Yeah. Pray, go away, and try another day. That's essentially what we see. Paul in Romans chapter 1 says, after these Jews, these very people right here who have rejected him, Paul says, it's my prayer that they will accept Christ. But remember, he had shaken the dust off his feet in Acts 13 and gone on. So he's praying, he's going away. And by the way, this brings us to the third, we'll probably close with this. Jesus really, really tried. What we're reading right here is called the third, we call it, it's not inspired, the third tour of Galilee, because he's been in Galilee for a year and a half now. He first arrived in Mark and all those passages. He goes on a one tour. You can look those up later. Second tour, Luke 8. Now we're in the third tour. This is approximately 900 square miles. Three times he goes around it, and 1.5 years he spends right there. He is trying. By the way, he's not getting in his car and cruising. I'll get my Lexus or my Mazda MPV with the sunroof down. He's walking and walking and walking and walking and walking everywhere he goes. Dust, dirt. This is the way. He's putting in some major effort here, and that's the whole point. He tried. He's really. So when he says later on, I was like a mother hen. Well, yes, but he's in Jerusalem also. Yeah. During this, before the first tour, he goes to Jerusalem.
He had more effort in Galilee than he had in Jerusalem, per se.
Yes, but he also had what is called the later Judean ministries, what we call it. He did go down there and spend time. He's alive for a year and a half. He's in a public ministry, if you will, for three plus years. He spends a year and a half dedicated up there, yes. But he could say to all of the Jews, I tried, in fact, if he could say it to Jerusalem when he had not spent as much time there, then he could certainly say it to Galilee when he had spent more time there. We'll stop there. Any comments or questions? Thank you for your work and preparation. We'll pick up with John the Baptist's record of his death. Remember Gary's little point he threw in there. No.